This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
WNYC Studios is supported by the community of writers, presenting live online short courses in the Writers Annex. Upcoming in 2024, Sylvia Plath, James Joyce's Ulysses, and Emily Dickinson. Instructors include Victoria Chang, Robert Haas, Brenda Hillman, Peter Orner, and Matthew Zapruder. Learn more at communityofwriters.org.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
You need to watch about only 45 seconds of any pro football game before you realize that can't be good for you at all. There have been plenty of spectacular injuries on the field, even deaths, but the invisible damage, the damage from getting your head walloped with huge force repeatedly, that has just recently become known to science, leading to what's been called football's concussion crisis. Nicholas Schmidl has been reporting on ways to make the game safer in light of that crisis. Now, Nick, just give me a reprise on what we know about the damage from concussions and how do we know it?
Yeah, about 15 years ago, a couple of former NFL players committed suicide. And a neuropathologist by the name of Bennett Amalu performed the autopsies on these two individuals, as well as one other former player who had recently died. And Amalu discovered on each of their brains high concentrations of an abnormal protein known as tau. Tau typically presented in Alzheimer's patients. And so he was struck that this was afflicting relatively healthy, middle-aged former professional athletes. And Amalu published his findings. They were not well received by the NFL. And for several years, the NFL denied that there was any connection between playing football and brain damage. In 2011, a number of former NFL players sued the league, alleging that it had deceived them as to the health risks of the game. And the NFL recently settled with the players for just shy of $1 billion.
This has led, or at least it's a major factor, in a dip in participation in football. There are at least 20% fewer boys playing football now in 2009. Nicholas Schmidl spent some time back in the fall at a high school in Florida, St. Thomas Aquinas, that's spending a lot of money trying to make the game safer.
St. Thomas Aquinas is a private high school in Fort Lauderdale with students walking around in Docksiders, parents picking up children in BMWs and such. It is not a school with a shortage of resources. It also has a nationally competitive football team. The reason why I went to St. Thomas is that as a result of the NFL's own concussion crisis, the coaches and the athletic director at St. Thomas are taking concerted steps to play the game safer. The other dynamic that appealed to me and that I was intrigued by was that several parents of active players were themselves former NFL players. Last November, on one weekday after practice, I went out to dinner with one of the players, a defensive end named Kevon Bennett, and his father, Cornelius Bennett, who was a NFL legend, Hall of Fame nominee, and we met at a steakhouse in Fort Lauderdale.
You can just leave that on the table, picture. Yeah, you can just leave the water picture on the table, yeah.
I'll probably drink 7-8 glasses of water.
Cornelius Bennett was a legend in the NFL. He played 13 seasons, went to 5 Super Bowls. He played outside linebacker and was ridiculously fast, incredibly tenacious.
Cornelius Bennett leaping up and volleyballing into the turf.
Like his dad, Cornelius, Kevon Bennett is a fierce defensive player. He plays defensive end for St. Thomas Aquinas.
And again, he runs into Bennett. Number 95 gets his big paws around Javonte Smith. Really like this player. First time I watched.
Kevon, you're just coming back from practice today, yes?
Right.
This is your first week as captain.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
How did that come about?
I think that just came about, you know, just being a natural leader in school, on the field, trying to make sure we always stay as a brotherhood. You know, I think that's an important value that my dad and all my coaches throughout the years have instilled in me. So,
can you have any particular stories from growing up?
First practice of Little League football, my dad told me, I want you to be in front of the line when y'all are doing sprints. He always wanted me to be the head of the team, because that's what he did when he was playing in the league and in college and throughout his life as well.
What I did was I stayed out of the way with football. Stayed outside the fence and watched him practice, and I would give him pointers riding home from practice or what have you. But I've always tried to stay out of the way, but I wanted it to be his decision because it's a tough sport and it's not for everybody. And there was a point in time when Caban didn't want to play football at all, and I was cool with it. I mean, I feel as though development that Caban has had over the last 2 years has been phenomenal. He's gone from unheard of to where he is today, and it's attributed to his willingness to go out and work, and he has listened to me over the years, which makes me proud. Yeah. I see him as being as good as he want to be.
Despite having this sterling professional career, arguably one of the highlights of Cornelius Bennett's football career overall is a tackle that he made as a college player. In October of 1986, his school, Alabama, hosted Notre Dame. Notre Dame had won the previous four contests. In the first quarter, Notre Dame's quarterback, Steve Berline, drops back to pass. Just as Berline was looking downfield to find a wide receiver, Bennett comes off the end running at full speed. Berline has no idea he's coming, and Bennett just drives his shoulder into him, lifts him off the ground, and leaves him on his back.
Play action, and boom, down he goes! Cornelius Bennett! Loose ball, no, the turf caused the fumble. Oh my goodness, did Cornelius Bennett bury him at the 25-yard line? Berline never saw Cornelius Bennett.
Could you talk about the Berline hit?
Wow. It was the only time in my 20, however many years of playing football that I actually knew that I'd hurt somebody. Not intentionally, of course, because I could hear when I hit him, the air going out of him. You know, almost like, you know, when you puncture something and you just I mean, it was just like that. And so, I mean, I saw him as he was turning around, as he was almost getting the ball up. And I just, you know, was in him before. I mean, that's the only way I can describe it. He was there, and he just happened to meet that speeding train. He happened to be standing on the railroad track. He tried to go with the next play, but I think he eventually fell from under the center. And I think, you know, they eventually called a timeout and got him out of the game.
But Berline was concussed. Mm-hmm. And you all then broke Notre Dame's streak of beating Alabama. Mm-hmm. You went into the NFL, retired in 2000. For you, retirement life was great. You golfed, enjoyed.
Did whatever I want to do.
For some of your contemporaries, however, were having a little bit of a hard time of it. Can you talk about sort of the point that you realized that there were people of your generation that were suffering from some effects of the game?
Well, when you say, so I would assume you're talking about brain injuries or what have you.
Yeah.
Wow, you know, you just, I mean, these are things that have been going on behind closed doors with the union, and we knew that there was some cause and effect. But the owners kept it to themselves and what have you, and hence the $1 billion concussion settlement.
Do you recall specific concussions of your own?
There's one in particular that I know. Looking at it now, we were playing Pittsburgh in the early 90s in Buffalo, and I took a heel to the side of the head. But, of course, it happened on more occasions than that. I think in my medical file, probably six listed, but that's more.
Would you think that 12, 15 would be a...
More than that.
More than that.
Of course. I played for a long time.
So when Cornelius retired, is right around the time that the concussion crisis was becoming news. And he wanted to use his own street cred, his own reputation, to get involved in trying to change the game for future generations. You know, he had a son who was 7 or 8 years old and asking his dad if he could play football. And so Cornelius becomes involved in the negotiations between the Players Association and league owners in trying to change the rules, trying to essentially make the game safer for his kid and other children of his age. What do you think have been the most significant, for better or worse, rule changes that have really changed the game?
To me, just the lessening of contact in practice. I mean, that's huge. That ain't no ifs, ands, and buts. I mean, when I played, you hit every day, and you had 2-a-days every day. How many days can y'all hit?
2 days. If you think about it, practice, you have, well, in my case, in high school, we play on Fridays. So we'll have 4 days of practice. And it's what you do in those 4 days that determines how healthy you're going to end up being for the Friday night. If you hit in all those 4 days, you might be a little banged up, and you're going to think, I'm going to still go out there and play. And then on the Friday, it just gets to the point where your body just can't handle it, and it turns out to be, God forbid, something serious.
The days nobody see. Sundays, the targeting stuff, that's probably the biggest.
What Cornelius means here is that on game day, the most important rule change concerns targeting, which covers a variety of illegal forms of contact, including blindsiding unsuspecting players.
You said a hit on Spurline. If I'd have hit that hit like that today, I'd have been ejected. Ain't no ifs, ands, and buts.
Have you had any dings, concussions that you've?
No, I've been great with head injuries. You know, I think that's just a part of the technique they teach us, and also how they keep our practices like full speed but as light, full contact as possible.
I was actually talking to one of the St. Thomas coaches this afternoon, and he was sort of grumbling about the rule changes and saying, you know, like as a former safety, this is not the game that I was playing. A wide receiver should be scared coming across the middle of the field because he's worried about getting hit. Now there's such protections to defend the skill players, the wide receivers, the quarterbacks, et cetera, that it's changing the game.
I do think, you know, I'm an old defensive player. Yeah, I don't want nobody crossing my face, and I can't lay the wood on them. Laying a good lick on a guy in the football field is kind of part of what the game is all about.
Were there things that you were trying to show Kevon when he was 9, 10, 11 about how to protect himself playing the game? Do you remember?
When I sat there on the fence, you know, I tried to, you know, hey, the bull in the ring, the stuff I did when I was a kid, hey, man, that stuff is outdated.
The bull in the ring, can you describe what does that drill look like?
That's one guy in the middle, circle of guys, and a coach give everybody in the circle a number. So he'd say one charges, boom, you take him on. You know, 10, boom, 5, boom. And you know, until the coach get tired of you getting hit. I mean, stupid stuff, you know, it ain't trying to make you tough kind of thing or whatever. That was still stupid.
Dumb. Asinine. It's asinine. It's just dumb. Like,
do you think about head injuries? Do you?
I just think about going out, playing, doing my job, winning. That's the only thing I think about in the play.
That's old school. You know, you don't go out there thinking about them, but doing your best.
Does the game seem safer now than it did when you played it? Or is football just, frankly, a dangerous game that can never sort of...
It's safer because of the new rules, and the high school associations are going to have to make provisions for that. God forbid, I don't ever want to see football go away, man. It's something I love to watch, my son and other kids. More than I like watching the NFL. My dad was a steelworker, and I think if he'd have known about asbestos and other stuff that dealt with in that steel mill, knowing that he had to provide for his family, I don't think it would have changed his mind about working in the steel mill. And that same thing with us in football. I don't have no regrets. All I've tried to do over the years is try to make it a better, safer game.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, people that don't play football and haven't played football at a high level, their opinions are going to be different from those of us that are going to end up playing football at a high level. So But football is still football. People are going to be diehard fans for years to come.
That's Kevon Bennett, and we heard his father, Cornelius Bennett, who retired from the Indianapolis Colts in 2000. They talked with the New Yorker's Nicholas Schmidl, who wrote about the use of safety measures by Kevon's high school team, including some very expensive tackling robots. You can find that article at newyorkerradio.org.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.